financials, that we were to sit with them and have a session as well, and saying, right, these are the commitments, how far have you got? So that it doesn't get to the end of the year when we've got this, you know, this report in front of us. Because it's very clear that the officials in the department have not taken the Auditor General's office very seriously, for whatever reason, and I hope that we get a chance to interrogate them on that. But I think as a committee, if we were sitting on their case, particularly now that we've got this disclaimer, sitting on their case at least on a quarterly basis on the audit outcomes and the key, what they call key controls, perhaps we'd be able to turn the situation around.
Can I just
one
of that, John?
Yeah.
John, we had an agreement with the department for them to report to us quarterly. And it isn't easy to get those reports. But we did get about two of them, and we're expecting the third one next week, if I'm not mistaken. That agreement was there.
Madam Chair, just if I may
follow up with you, Madam Chair, would it not be easier for us then to, I suppose we couldn't access into the AG's office then? If the department's not sharing them with us, is there another mechanism where we could, as a committee, get them?
Lawrence, we also did have an agreement with you to mention we need you, we'll give you a ring. It's also there, John.
Thank you. I'm the new guy, sorry.
Chairperson, that agreement definitely still stands. I think, but that's why I've highlighted to you earlier on now that we've requested in writing the new commitments based on this report and we haven't received it. So the first step is that the department needs to give us those commitments. Then we can evaluate those commitments and we can look if we think that these commitments will take the department forward. The next thing that we will be requesting from the department is a detailed action plan on how to get to a clean audit. So when we've got those commitments, we will most certainly share them with them. But I think the members got a very valid point in that those commitments should be tracked on a quarterly basis. Those commitments, as well as the audit, the detailed audit action plan, should be tracked on a regular basis. And you should try and get some feedback also from us, most definitely, but I think also it's important to look at internal audit reports and maybe you should consider to get some interaction, maybe even with the audit committee. I know it's something new that I'm suggesting now, but even if you just ask a report from the audit committee, or even if you just ask for the audit committee minutes, you know, that might assist you. But I think the tracking cannot be overemphasized.
Ravi,
thank you.
No, just one. In your presentation, you said there seems to be lack of students. But you've dealt with three teachers in this period. Don't you find that very frustrating that every time you have to deal with a new teacher? And isn't there a lack of administrative leadership within the department? Because that could be the problem. You've got to get to the problem. You've dealt with three different teachers within this period here. Thank you.
I think I'm partly covered because I wanted also to check on the issue of leadership as it appears here. Because the issue of leadership is key. If there is a leadership crisis, we'll have such a report. I wanted to check your opinion around that, to say, because we talk about skills, but also it's like the leadership has done nothing. Which means to say that if not, I don't know whether it's, they have done nothing because of the incapacity, or it's the problem that there is no continuity, that after you have, as the Auditor General, dealt with those particular people and then they seem to understand what you need, your expectation in the department, and then disappear and somebody comes. And it's like you start from scratch. It's like transitional all the time, which means to say that we can't have a way forward on this particular issue. We want you to comment on that one so that we get a real understanding. Because to me, Honorable Chair, if I read this report, it's like the department that is non-existent, that will be equal to a department that will be established today so that we can come up with all the systems in place, because there is nothing according to this report. So it means like it's reconstruction and development. Sikala gabusha, siyakha. You know, if we want to have that particular department. And the attitude also, if you can comment on the attitude of the officials of the department, because it's like they are resisting anybody that is coming with assistance according to this report. You will have the external the auditors, the internal and external auditors, maybe as we are advising us that we may request their minutes. But you said, because I wanted to check whether, according to you, if you can comment, are we getting value for money by those external auditors if we have got such a report? As the department, are they getting value for money for these auditors that are there? Because I can't believe that you can have professional body that is meant to assist the department to come up with systems and everything that will assist in the auditing, and only to find that it's like there is nothing happening. Maybe you'll comment to say that, no, they are getting value for money because there were these recommendations, because I also understand that when we do the issue of auditing, you'll also look at the issue of the external auditors and internal auditors' reports. The minute you'll take it to there to say that, what was their comment? What is it that they have done to try and remedy the situation? Because at the moment, they are like full-time politicians, if I may say. They were there, even though those leadership were coming and going. But I don't think this auditor has been changed. Maybe are we getting value for money on that? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. First of all, maybe I'm subject to your correction, FD House. You know, we do get these quarterly reports. But only to find that there are so many gaps, it's like you are audit or you are making a follow-up on, it ends up not focusing on this report because they tell you this and this and that, and then we end up focusing on the other report. So it's no longer the quarterly report, it's about six monthly report. I wanted to say, how about, will it be ridiculous if maybe we ask for monthly reports? So that we are on track until the department itself is on track, and then we go back to the quarterly report. We ask them, this is what we requested last month, and then how far are you? Because a quarter is 3 months, and then really, when they go there, when they come to us, they come with different stories, and in the end, you find that you are dealing with the previous quarterly report, not the recent one. the monthly report, is it possible? Secondly, before they used to say the because of the vacancies that were in the department, they were saying no because of this and this and that, and then I believe the vacancies were filled in about 640 vacancies, so 641, or thank you, to be exact. But are these, like my colleague was saying, do you get value for money, or with they just filled in the vacancies that were there and then that was it? Yes, for the sake of filling. Just that.
Yeah, let me give you a bite for the first time.
Thanks, you know, my question would be, can we declare that this department is in the ICU now? Can we declare that? If we which we don't say that, it means that we will be misleading ourselves. But in the ICU, there are two things that must happen. It's either a person goes or it comes out. So in this case, if they are coming back, do you see them coming back? Because looking at your letter that you wrote to say that these are the problems that in our investigation have found. Now, they have not responded to the letter. We don't know what is the reason. Maybe one of the reasons could be the new DDG, the new acting DDG, or DG. It's DDG.
DDG.
Mabuza. Maybe it's new. You only written a letter before he was recruited into this position. You know, that means that other situation is worrying me. Maybe the letter was received by the other acting DDG, because you're in this department, you change leadership like you are underwears. We didn't see socks. Now in the 1 year that time I was here, we changed nearly 3 times. Now senior leadership. Maybe the letter is a sign that this department is now going. It's no longer there. There's no chance of resuscitated. Can we say that? Because I was just talking to my colleague here in the area. I'm not saying she. But I was saying that this. Usually when there is Panyamba, people ask about him. In Kanyamba, what is it? Tornado. When the tornado moves from Free State to Northwest, all the houses where it passes by are record. You know, it takes the roots off. Now, in this case, can we say that the tornado has passed through this department, and the department is usually the government declares set of emergency, what is it? Disaster. Can we declare disaster in this department? That opinion comes from you. I think you must say it. Thank you.
Lawrence, he's a preacher, that's why he's going parable. So, can you please respond and we move on?
Okay. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, members. I think the essence of all the questions that came forward now after the break was about leadership. And if you look at our slideshow on page 26, you will see that we deal there with the whole page on leadership. So yes, your assessment is indeed correct that it's a challenge with leadership. There was an acting DG up until July last year. Then a permanent DG was appointed. He was then suspended in December. An acting DG was appointed. And then now was it in August, the acting DG has been put on special leave and a new acting DG has been appointed. Yeah. Yeah, but Mr. Bukela was acting before the DG was appointed July last year, and then again he was appointed acting, so it's three different persons, but four terms, if I can put it like that. Definitely, the fact that there's not a stable leadership definitely has got an impact. Leadership must drive strategy, first of all. Leadership must take responsibility for proper systems, make sure the right people get appointed, make sure that you obtain your objectives and you get a clean audit. So that's definitely the role of leadership. And I think one of the members made it very practical to say you would have discussions with the leadership, you will brief them on the challenges and the risks, And that's exactly what we do. As soon as the permanent DG was appointed in July last year, we were immediately there, and we sat and we took him in a long session through all the risk areas and what we believe should be done. And then he started with the process, and then shortly after that, he was put on special leave. Then we sat with Mr. Bukela. We took him, through the same processes. So definitely that has got a impact on the department. So it's very important that leadership should stabilize as soon as possible, and that that would be able to make sure that the strategies are attended to, and I think most of the audit areas. And if you look at what we've got there on the slides on page 19, that is what we think will change the environment most definitely. So with regard to the vacancies that have been filled, I think it's a bit difficult for me to give an assessment at this point in time. Some of those vacancies in senior positions were only filled post year end. For instance, I know that they've increased their capacity in the finance side at the property management training entity, I think with two additional directors. You know, we will have to see what that will what impact that will have ultimately. So that's a bit difficult for me to comment on that. With regard to the value from the auditors, honourable member, I'm not sure whether you were focusing on internal or external audit, but both. But that was my understanding. Definitely, both internal and external audit should add value. I've indicated that the challenge with internal audit is capacity, and that they don't have the capacity to deliver the reports at the right time and to focus on all the key risk areas. You will also see that one of the things that we highlight is we are saying that a proper risk assessment has not been done. You know, and that's key, because you first need that proper risk assessment, because then external or internal audit would normally focus on that risk assessment. From an external audit point of view, the department might differ from us, but we believe that we do add that value. If you look at the interactions that we have, right from ministerial level to the DG, to the EXCO, to the steering committees that we have, and at some stages throughout the audit, we had those steering committees literally on a weekly basis. So we believe that we give the right feedback to the department to take the necessary action to take this department forward. Yeah, there was a question about ICU. I think disclaimers is as we explained, and if you look at this, the faces that we've got earlier in the presentation, it is not a good situation to be in. But I believe that with stable leadership, starting off with proper commitment, starting off with a proper audit action plan, and commitment to that, monitoring, oversight, it can change. We've read in the newspapers the other day that one department have, after 16 years, obtained a clean audit. It's possible. I think so. It's very important that you need to understand where's the problems, what do I need to do to fix it, make sure you get the right resources to fix it, and stable, effective leadership is key. Sorry for that, honourable member. Sorry for missing that one. Yes, specifically on the commitments. I think it's very important, because commitment is high level. You don't have to write a thick report like this. But it's very important, and let me stress this point before I forget. I think when we talk about any report being presented to this committee or to any other committee or internally or to the minister, to an audit committee, no matter what level, we're talking about a quarterly report. Let's say we're talking about a quarterly report on our performance against predetermined objectives. Let's say we're talking about a quarterly set of financial statements. Ownership should be taken. There should literally be something in writing to say, I am the CFO, I am presenting this financial statement to Exco, I have reviewed this financial statements, these financial statements are accurate and complete. You know, the same when something goes to the minister or to the audit committee, and then whoever executes that oversight should make sure that you interrogate that information to make sure that if there's any gaps in that information that you will pick it up and that it will be dealt with. So yes, indeed monthly.
Madam Chair, I just want to find out how important is the Audit and Risk Management Committee in terms of the processes which you've outlined here? Because I've looked here at on page 53 of the thing and sorry, the annual report. And there are six members of the committee, there were four meetings held. Only two members attended all those meetings, two attended half and two only attended one. Now, is this an important committee in terms of the controls that you're talking about? Is four meetings a year enough, and do you believe that the necessary attention was given to, you know, at a committee level to this particular aspect?
Chairperson, a very valid question, and it ties up with our finding in the audit report where we are saying that the proper risk assessment process has not been followed. So, ideally what should happen is that a risk assessment should be done by management. The first responsibility for risk assessment is management responsibility. Not even the internal auditors or the external auditors. You can use internal audit to facilitate your risk assessment, but your first responsibility for risk assessment is management. Because who tells you what the risks are? Management. Management sits around the table and say, what is our risk? What is it that we need to focus on? What is it that can harm this business? What is it that can lead us to get negative audit outcomes? Then normally that goes to your risk committee, who then must deal with it in a constructive manner, make sure that there is an action plan to address the risk, that action plan gets adopted, communicated, that is assessment of the progress against that action plan, that risks are reassessed on a regular basis. So the functioning of that risk committee is key in this whole process, because one of your risks that you will have on your risk register, and it will most probably one of your top five risks, is getting a negative audit outcome.
Mr. Shamsiren indicated 11 entities that play a role in particular around the issue of immovable properties, that is two departments as well as nine provinces. And you also indicated that the other challenge is that the asset register is in the National Department of Public Works. Hence also I want to hear your opinion, because you said you'll find that property management trading entities, sometimes there are renovations at the provincial level, and it's not added because it's national. What will be your suggestion around the issue of asset register? Where must it be so that it can capture every renovation and so on and so forth?
Thank you, Chairperson. In other words, saying a nutshell, I don't think I would be wrong if I say you have been consulting with the core leadership of this department, both administratively and politically. And to me now, it means the problem of this department is leadership, and that is the bottom line. Thank you.
Yeah, it's more like this. You can't express an opinion, then what?
Thank you.
by that last question, Honourable Chairperson, the member says we cannot express an opinion, then what? I'm not quite sure. Okay, what should happen now is actually the department should now, and that is very important, and now I understand your question, I think that's key. Going forward now, you can't draw that line in the sand which everyone wishes for and just start from tomorrow from scratch. You can't do that. So to move away from a disclaimer of an opinion is very difficult. Because what must happen now, if you look at, for instance, our qualifications on irregular expenditure and then debtors, it comes from previous years. So you must start to fix from the year that you were qualified on it to be able to get out of that. So you, like irregular expenditure, and we had that discussion with the department the other day, where the department, where we said to them, you cannot now just for the 11-12 financial year make sure you record all your irregular expenditure. You've been qualified for the two previous years. So it's an extensive process. You must go through all your procurement transactions 2 years back. Because the department's argument was, you know what, that's a very extensive exercise. Let's rather leave it and go on. If we say that the qualification will stand, you have to go back. So, Honourable Member, Chairperson, it's very, very hard work that lies ahead now to go and clean up the previous years as well, to move out from that disclaimer of a audit opinion. With regard to the asset register, I think maybe the member misunderstood me. There is in fact 11 registers. So, the guidance from National Treasury and the Guillaume Act determines whose is whose. And that's the process which is now taking place. In other words, each province will assess its assets and it will determine in terms of Guillaume and the guidance from National Treasury, is this my province's asset or is this a national asset? If it's a national asset, the question is then, is it a public works asset or is it a rural development and land affairs asset? And that's why it's important that the 11 parties sit together. Because if I'm province A and I go through all my assets and I determine, okay, this piece of land in terms of this criteria is not supposed to be in my province, let's say it's northwest, then you take it off your register. But that's not a good thing. Because you must immediately now go and sit around the table and say, okay, so whose asset should it be then? And then before you scratch it out of your register, it must be agreed on, okay, now that's National Public Works asset, and the National Public Works might say, fine, give me the information, I'll put it on my register. Because if everyone just say, oh, this is not mine, this is not mine, we're never going to get to the full picture, because then things get lost in the process again. And what makes it difficult is how, what happened in the past years, how properties were registered, in whose name, in which department's name, what was the name called? Sometimes it's RSA, sometimes it's national government, sometimes it's National Department of Public Works, sometimes it's just public work. Yeah. So therefore, there's 11 registers. I think that's key to realize that. And what should happen is the ideal situation should be that actually, you know, that you... the asset is in the books of the entity that does the capital improvements. Should be that will make it easier. If you don't have that, you need to make sure you've got a very, very rigorous system of dealing with that capital improvements.
Can I continue?
If I don't ask now, I will forget it. I just, something crossed my mind. Yesterday I attended the in local government and out of the suggestions that were done by Treasury, one of them was that the local government at that level, they need to, if they've got some piece of land that they don't use, they can sell it. And I was a bit disturbed, because if you are selling a piece of land at that level, in most cases, they don't even know who that land belongs to, whether it's the national or provincial or their own land, because of the problem with the registration of pieces of land. Now you sell this piece of land to the Chinese, and now in the middle of some other properties, and then it belongs to a Chinese guy. So how does it work? So I couldn't ask the question directly to those two, because I had to leave for another meeting.
Honourable Chairperson, member, that's indeed a risk area, and that's why it's so important that these asset registers get sorted out as soon as possible. My understanding is that the process is already going at an advanced stage to amend Kiahama to also include the municipalities. So that legislation is very important to make sure that we get that structure, that from at all spheres of government we know who is whose, we make sure we get everything on the registers, and that you can only sell what is yours. The department will also, I think, and I attended that meeting of this portfolio committee where the department gave some feedback about, you know, trying to get people to come forward. Now the amnesty where property was just taken unlawfully in the past, you know, but it seems like if up to now no one has come forward. So there's unfortunately, we sit with that risk that the burden is for Kiahama to take it forward. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. If we look at page 18 of the slides, there we report material underspending on the vote, and there's two key issues there. The one deals with the immovable asset management program. Now, don't let this name confuse you. It confused me, to be quite honest. It doesn't relate to the immovable assets we've talked up to now. This relates to the schools program, where they are actually building schools. And this is done through the IDT as a project manager. So there was understanding on that program. So it's something that needs to get attention to make sure that you know, we don't sit in a situation at year end where funds have to be surrendered because projects were not completed in time. The second one is a bit more complex. It's the expanded public works program. So if one purely look at the financial statements of the department and you look at the funds available and the funds actually utilized, we sit with the 500 million rand that's then not spent. However, one do need to understand how this program works. And it works on the basis that the municipalities and in some cases the provinces that implements these expanded public works program projects, they first need to incur the expenditure, then they need to submit the report to the national department, and then the national department evaluates the report and then they pay out. So although we reported this as an under-expenditure because it is a material under-expenditure, I think when one looked at this, one must be careful to not necessarily just blame the department for under-expenditure, because we also don't want a situation where they just pay out it without having the reports and everything. So I think the focus here should rather be on what actions can be taken from a national perspective to get the municipalities and the provinces to be more effective in the implementation. It should be more that kind of intervention that one should be looking at here. Restatement of corresponding figures. I think throughout our discussions, when I discussed the qualifications, I've indicated to the committee in several cases there were prior year figures changed, and we could not in all cases get the information on why and how those changes were made. Under the emphasis of matter, it just required for us to note to the user of the financial statements if there were prior figures that have been restated. Can we get to the material losses? This is the 54 million that I've discussed earlier on. 54 million rands worth of irrecoverable debts written off. You know, now, when you engage with the department, the department can give you the details on this. This is debt coming over a really long period of time. I think key here is to realize that it's important that you need to always know who your debtors are, why are they owing you the money, and that you should be following it up vigorously to make sure that you get your money in, that you don't have to end up in a situation where you have to write off 54 million rands of debt.
Can I ask a question? Just to find out, was this money written off in terms of a policy or procedure, or was it just a blanket decision that was taken to, you know, to just draw a line through everybody who was at 100, you know, or sort of what, 200 days or something,
yeah,
without an assessment on whether what the recoverability was?
Yes. I think ultimately on this 54 million rand, when we looked at it, we could see that the department tried to resolve it. But they were literally in a situation where they couldn't get any information. Some of these debts are so old that there was a system change before. Currently the department is on what we call BAS, basic accounting system. Before that it was FMS, financial management system. Some of these debts actually comes from when they were still on the previous financial system. So they lost information along the way, key information that would enable them to actually determine who is the real debtor, why was this debt there, so that they can actually take further action. That's why it's so important. You can't let it wait so long, you know, because then it gets to a point where humanly you cannot resolve it anymore. And then there was proper approval for this write-off, but I think key in this is that there should be systems in place that this does not happen ever again.
Thanks, Chair. I'm just thinking aloud. I think I remember there was a time, I think in 2008, when the department bought a machine for 48 million, but that was never used. It lay there for quite a long time until it gathered dust until. That amount of money kept outstanding for quite a long time. I think it's one of those things. They bought a machine they couldn't use, and I don't know why they bought it. It's such an expensive machine. I don't know.
There was a building of the department which was flooded with water. Is it not where the information was destroyed?
Okay, thank you, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am. Honourable Chairperson, members, I think we're getting now to the predetermined objective part. Remember that this is only in the department and not in the property management trading entity. I think a short summary of the situation is here that for selected programs that we looked at, and remember the key years is we looked at what was the planned targets, and then does the entity have enough information to support the actual achievements? And we are saying that the targets were not specific in clearly identifying the nature and the required level of performance. This is key, because ultimately you need to measure your performance, so your targets needs to be very clear. We're talking about the so-called SMART principles. It should be time-bound, you know, for instance. And then we say that there's no clear indication of what is it that they actually need to be to measure to be able to put you in a position to determine that you actually achieve what you set out to achieve. Now those criteria should be properly set out right in the beginning in the strategic plan. and then it should be measured. And that's why my suggestion to this oversight committee is that when you interrogate performance information, the first thing you need to do is, and it starts off with your process, and I think we had that discussion earlier in the year when you reviewed the strategic plans. When you look at the strategic plan, you should say to yourself, if I look at this specific objective, do I understand as an independent member what the department wants to achieve? Is the target clear to me? And then what is it that the department will have to present to me to convince me that this actual target has been achieved? One of the examples that I always use is the one of job creation. It's quite a common target at many departments and many entities. And when one develops that target, you should, for instance, identify what is a job, what is a sustainable job. Is it when someone was employed for a month, 2 months, 3 months, a year, 2 years? You know, when will you count it as one job being created? You know. And then the challenge that we had during the audit, and it specifically relates to the expanded public works program, is that the department could not give us the information for us to verify those actual achievements. Despite several requests to the department could not give us the information. Now, that information should be readily available because it should be quarterly internal assessment, it should be assessed by internal audit. So when we as external auditors call for that information, it should literally be handed over the table. You know, there should not be any challenge in providing that information. If we then get to the section on compliance, and you will note that this section on compliance, what we've done is to make it a bit easier and quicker. There's a column to your right, DPW on the left and PMTE to your right, because you will see that many of these findings actually is in both the entities. The first one deals with strategic planning, no effective, efficient and transparent system of internal control regarding performance management. That's a requirement of legislation, and we just discussed the performance information findings now. It's a requirement that every entity that has to report on performance information must have a proper system. If you don't have a proper system, you will never be successful in reporting on your performance information. Then we get to the very important one, which relates to the property management trading entity, which I've discussed with you earlier on, where we said that the Department of Public Works did not finalize and approve the business case for running the trading entity and consequently did not formulate a policy and reporting framework for the head of the trading entity. This is key. The department must really now go and determine what is it that this trading entity must do, what systems and procedures and policies must be put in place. Someone very designated needs to take charge of the property management trading entity and needs to report to the accounting officer. If you look at the treasury regulations, in the case of a trading entity, it's a very interesting situation in that you can actually appoint a head of the trading entity to run that entity, that part of your business. But you will ultimately still be accountable to the accounting officer in the department. So the accounting officer in the department still ultimately take full accountability for that. But a situation like that will go a long way in making sure that a trading account gets enough attention and leadership and strategic drive to achieve its objective in the end of the day. The financial statements, both the financial statements of the property management trading entity and the department, were not prepared in terms of the required standards. And despite significant adjustments being made, it could not get to the point where we could express an unqualified audit opinion. The financial statements was not supported by full and proper records. That's also part that led to the disclaimer. We identified a lot of material misstatements throughout the audit, which were corrected in many instances, but could still not lead us to an unqualified audit opinion. Internal audit, the internal audit function did not assess the operational procedures and monitoring mechanisms over transfers made in terms of the division of revenue act. has a very specific requirement in the Division of Revenue Act that the internal audit should focus on that funds that are transferred in terms of the Division of Revenue Act. There are hundreds of millions of rand that are transferred by this department in terms of the Division of Revenue Act. And therefore, it's a requirement of the legislation that the internal audit function should focus on those transfers. It's key. If we get to procurement and contract management, and I think I don't have to go into too much detail. This is basically what led to the irregular expenditure. And it basically relates to not following the right processes when procurement is done, not obtaining three quotations when you should get three quotations. And in the case of the department, and more specifically the property management trading entity, when we talk about all these different leases, you need to still follow a proper process when you need to obtain accommodation. You need to go out on tender. You cannot follow a negotiated process as a standard. Those should be the exceptions. So there's a lot of irregular expenditure that has been identified by the department, but there's also a lot that has been identified by the Auditor General, and therefore we're not satisfied that it's complete. So here we just report on the non-compliance. For instance, there's another requirement of the Treasury regulations that say that the department must, within 10 working days, report to the Auditor General in all cases where goods and services above 1 million rand, that included, had been procured in terms of that specific Treasury regulation. Now that regulation is basically the one which deals about urgent and emergency procurement and when you deviate from the normal procurement processes. It happened a lot at the department. We were not notified of one.
Yes, sir. Just a clarity on this, the procurement. According to yourselves as auditors, does the department have a skilled supply chain management committee? And did you interact with the supply chain management? Because all the tenants must go to a supply chain management. Did you as auditors interact with them? Are you happy with them?
Chairperson, we do interact throughout the audit process. I think the findings that you see here is an indication that the prescribed policies and procedures are not being followed. It's difficult to say where the problem lies. Our recommendation is normally with where the supply chain management deviation, that the starting point should be training. You should first of all make sure that everyone is trained, including your BID committee and your BID adjudication committee. All the role players should be properly trained in supply chain management. The supply chain management processes and procedures and prescripts are very comprehensive. So, and you cannot just have a course once in your life. There will have to be updates, because what happens is that National Treasury on a regular basis, like now in May, issues new directives, new practice notes. And every time that those directives and practice notes are issued, all relevant role players in the supply chain should be trained and informed about the changes. And once again, this is where internal audit has got a very important role to play, because internal audit must assess these processes and controls on a regular basis to make sure. So if you have findings like this, there's definitely work to be done at your committee levels as well that deals with your procurement, because part of their function is also to make sure that these rules and regulations are adhered to.
Well, I know that you cannot dig deep, but basically the truth of the matter, the problem of this department is supply chain management. That is where the tenants are. That is where the basic problem of this department is. Because everybody, officials, politicians, want to have a stake of tenants. And you know, one feels that the auditors must dig more deeply. That's where the problem, the country's problem, lies here. And we feel that you're just, you know, browsing over these guys, you read the newspapers, tenders, all that. You still not to be digging deep. This is where the problem is. Thank you.
if this was what is happening, does this not constitute a criminality? Did it?
Honourable Chairperson, members, I think just to I'll take the two questions basically together. You see, in supply chain management, you can get purely procedural issues that are not complied with. You're supposed to get three quotations, and you just don't know you should get three, or you just neglect to get three. That can sometimes happen, and that's why we say training is important. There can also be then reasons for not doing it. Or it can also, on paper, look like if you obtain three quotations, but it's not three valid quotations. It's difficult for me to express a view about the criminality, and I think what is important to notice is that, and we'll discuss it when we talk about investigations. I mean, currently, the Special Investigation Unit is busy doing the investigations on the supply chain management in the department. It's an investigation that's now ongoing for about a year, and I think the department can give you more details about that. So to determine whether there's criminality or not, those processes will most probably follow from the investigations which are being done by the Special Investigation Unit. So I think the request was that it should be looked in deeper. That is being done by the Special Investigation Unit at this point in time.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to know, isn't it a prerequisite in all big companies or professional companies to look for three quotations before, you know, taking a decision that this one is the one who qualifies? I mean, in such a big department, how can a person just assume that one quotation will be enough? I think this person has gone through an interview, and obviously, before he was appointed to man the department, he knew already what is he going to be faced with. And we expect him to be more professional so that he can be accountable at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I mean, one quotation is not enough. I mean, even a person who's not professional enough will know that three quotations will be required, you know.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Indicate that people breach the regulation. But I want to check, Honorable Chair, here Mr. Van Sieren quoted the treasurer's regulation. I want to check, do the department have supply chain management policy? Because seemingly it's like there is no system that we can look at. Because it's only regulation, they are supposed to have supply chain management policy.
Chairperson, yes, the department does have their own policies, and but we are not always convinced that those policies are properly communicated to everyone, that they're always properly updated, and that everyone knows which is the latest version of the policy. During the audit process, what we do during the audit process is the first thing we ask the entity, please give us all your policies and give us your latest policies and give us the assurance that these policies that we're going to use are indeed your latest policies. And we had some challenges in that in the audit process. It's also not readily accessible. I think with regard to the other member's comment about everyone should know the three quotations.
Hey, can you allow him to respond and not interrupt?
Yeah, I think it's key to note. I can think back to the day when we had the discussion with one of the with the DG when he just joined. When we talked about this very same issue in the steering committee meeting, and we said we need those policies, the DG's view was, "Oh, that's very easy. It should be available on our internet.
Yeah.
You know, you can just go there and get it." And then the end result is that's not the case, you know, and no one can give you assurance that what is there is the final policy. So I think you need to understand it from that. From that context. So the first thing is to make sure which are the final policies, and then awareness of the policies, then implementation of the policies, and then monitoring of the policies. So policies is a key issue, yeah. And you constantly need to make sure that your policies are aligned to the latest regulations. So whenever a practice note changes, you need to go and change your policy. You cannot accept that everyone will read the practice note in conjunction with your policy. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. So I think the big problems are more specifically with procurement, emergency procurement. You know, I think when you engage with the department, it's an area that you want to maybe focus on, in that the department will argue in many cases it's emergency procurement, and one needs to try and draw the distinction. What is an emergency and what is just not good planning? You know, I've given you the example earlier on with leases that expire. You should know 6 months to a year in advance before a lease expires so that you can put the proper process in place. For other big procurement, you've got your budget, which is a three-year MTF. You've got your strategy, which is 3 years. You should know well in advance what you want to do when so that you can get the processes in place. So that emergency procurement should really be when we sit here and suddenly water starts to run from this roof. Then there's cases, I mean, for instance, where when they have to go out on competitive bidding, it's supposed to be 21 days, where there's a shorter period, and one needs to ask yourself why the shorter period. If you cut the period from 21 to 7 days, does that really make a difference in your environment? It makes a lot of difference for people who want to tender. But that, can you really prove that 7 days actually made a huge difference in you actually allocating that specific tender? Then very important is that the department could not always give us convincing evidence that procurement was only done from suppliers who had valid tax clearance certificates. Remember, that's a prerequisite. Before you do any business over 30,000 rand with any company, they need to be able to give you a original valid tax clearance certificate, and this finding was also raised in the previous year. Then very important, there's a requirement since 2000, I think it's about October 2009, that you cannot make awards to suppliers who did not submit a declaration on whether they were employed by the state or connected to any person employed by the state. This is the mechanisms that are coming in now to try and avoid conflict of interest. So the department needs to be able to give us those declarations whenever procurement was done from a specific company. That couldn't be done in all cases. Then construction contracts were awarded to contractors that were not registered or did not qualify for that specific rand value of the contract in terms of the CIDB guidelines. Extensions or modifications to contracts were not approved by the right delegated official. There's a lot of extensions and changes to contracts, and it's not always approved by the right delegated official. Then what we just this year we changed our reporting format a bit. So because it's a requirement of the PFMA that you should first of all prevent irregular expenditure, secondly detect it, and thirdly report it in your financial statements. In all cases where there were irregular expenditure, we actually now report in the audit report to say that the accounting officer did not take effective and appropriate steps to prevent and detect irregular expenditure. And the same for fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And you will remember that we have got the item on foodless and wasteless venture, where we are of the view that the department does not have adequate systems to detect it. There were instances where expenditure was incurred without the approval of the relevant delegated official. And then very important, and this is also
on
one...
third one. On this expenditure was incurred without the approval of the delegated official. It's like leases, a national leases that are signed. I'm just giving an example for you to hear. It's like national leases that are signed by area managers. Is it the same thing?
It's a possibility. I can't remember their delegations off by heart, but that's the principle. The principle will say a lease up to 5 million rands can be signed by a deputy director general. A lease above that can only be signed by the DDG. So it's exactly that situation, yeah. An extension on a contract up to that value can be signed up until that level. So it's quite right. So it's possible that someone in a region signs a contract which might only be signed by the national DG. That's the principle.
But
hey,
you want to
be
able to
report
for the
list?
Yeah.
No.
Thanks for
another good chair. I want to check here. I also wanted to get the clarity as you say, if we are saying the expenditure was intended without the approval of the delegated official. I'm really interested in the system and policies of the department, because this is where the piece of the matter has to start, to say that as you say, it was happening, if you have the dedication for the department, so that you do the comparison,
yeah,
to say that what is there is not correct. I want to check, because I'm asking this question because seemingly in my view there is like a resistance in the department to be open, not transparent. The official seems not to be transparent, to give the required information to assist the auditors to work. But at some stage, do you get those information or,
yeah,
like delegation?
Honourable Chairperson, member, yes, that's what we do. We ask for the delegations because that's what we do when we look at to verify whether the expenditure has been approved by the right delegated official. But my senior manager has just noted to me that there were also some areas where there were, I don't want to call it disagreement, but let's say different interpretation of the delegations, you know, and I mean those are the things that needs to be looked at. The delegations needs to be very clear on who can approve
what. But in a very simple, for an ordinary woman like me to understand, to you, as an auditor general, what does it say to you if a national lease of, let's say, of around 500 million is signed by a regional manager? To me, as an ordinary woman, I would say I'm shifting the responsibility to a junior, so that when problems emerge, I should not be accountable. That junior should see our mistake. To you, what does it say?
The delegations are actually dealt with in the PFMA, where the PFMA allows an accounting officer to delegate, but it doesn't give limits. So it's really up to the individual who is the accounting officer to decide in terms of his risk management practices, what is he prepared to do. You get some DGs that will say everything above, let's say, 1 million rand comes to my table. But in practical terms, it can also mean that DG will sit 365 days a year just signing contracts. So you have to weigh up your risk versus practicality, and then you have to apply your judgment. You must also look at your control environment. It's possible as a accounting officer that you can say, five of my regional managers, I know they know the business. For them, they can approve it. These four are new ones. For them, I lower the value. You can do that. It doesn't happen often, but it can be done. So it's a risk management practice. It's difficult for... Ultimately, in law, and the PFMA is also very clear about that, you can delegate, but you ultimately take responsibility.
Okay.
So even though that has been delegated to a regional head, if something goes wrong, you as the accounting officer takes responsibility.
It's a proper way of delegating.
That's
you
right.
On paper, or you do it verbally.
Must be on paper.
Thank you.
To make a follow-up check, I want to check. Here we are saying there has been no risk management policy to guide. If we delegate also, I think there must be policy that will be guiding a person that we are delegating authority. And I tend to say that you only delegate the task, not the responsibility. What I want to check is to say you have delegations, they have given the delegation, but the policy that guide, because when you take a decision, you must take it within the ambit of the policy of the law, you know. That will guide you to say, I give you this this task as a delegation, but you will be guided by 1, 2, 3. Do we have something in the department like that?
Honorable Chairperson, remember, you're asking very detailed questions now. I haven't read myself the delegations lately. Normally, that is what a delegation document will say. It will normally be a statement in to say that this delegation is subject to you complying with all the policies, procedures, legislation, whatever. And as I've said, delegations is, you cannot issue delegations without considering risk management practices. And that's why the moment that you as an accounting officer realize you've got a high risk in certain areas, the obvious thing to do is to immediately change your delegations. Yes, it will put more pressure on you as an individual, but at least you will minimize your risk as an individual, because the PFMA is clear. You can delegate, but you're ultimately accountable.
You can delegate, and who's the account when you have delegated?
You.
The new accounting officer. The
accounting officer.
You delegate the task, not the responsibility.
So in other words, Chairperson, the DG can delegate it to a DDG to sign a contract. If the DDG signs a contract which he shouldn't have signed, where proper processes have not been followed, yes, the DDG can be held accountable. The PFMA is also very clear about that, but the DG will also be held accountable.
And if you delegate, not assessing the risk, and after delegation, there are risks, you are to account, and are you allowed to drag in the person that you delegated that responsibility to come and sit next to me as an accounting officer? So that person can help me in responding. Is it how it should work, or you should just go and account alone as an accounting officer? Meanwhile, there's this mess. Should I really, truly speaking, I'm a human being, should I really, as an accounting officer, carry that burden alone? Meanwhile, I don't know. I want you to clarify.
Yeah.
And I think inwardly, many of us feel it. You know where am I leading to? You know. So I want to be clarified on that one.
Jefferson, I'm also eagerly looking for my PFMA now. The PFMA has got it's got two sections. The one section says the accounting officer can delegate, but he ultimately remains accountable. But then there's also another section that specifically deals with the responsibilities of officials. And that section is very clear to say that every official within his responsibility must act responsible and in accordance with the law. So in other words, if it's delegated to me and I don't follow proper processes and I transgress the law, I can be held accountable by the accounting officer. No problem. So the person who signed the contract will most definitely also be held accountable. But ultimately, the accounting officer is also accountable, and why he's accountable is because he should put proper processes in place to make sure that the delegation takes place in a properly controlled environment. But the official that transgressed is most definitely accountable.
Chairperson, thank you. You see, my greatest concern with this thing of power delegations and stuff is, you know, some people will corruptly so use them where it will suit them properly. Because, you know, it's like, you know, reading the Bible where you know that it suits you properly. You know, some people, I think we must be very strict when it comes to delegated powers, where an accounting officer must remain an accounting officer. Not, you know, account only where it suits you. Because some people will use that way.
Yeah, you know, it, compliance from 20 to 25 is very interesting. And it's basically delegation of powers and accounting and so on and so forth. But as far as you are concerned, when you deal with the department, there's a lot of transgression in this from 20 to 25. Are there any disciplinary actions taken against any officials yet? And I think it's the whole department, as far as I'm concerned. Most of the senior officers are involved in it. What actions are they? In fact, sorry to say, even the acting DG might also be involved because he was a senior officer. Thank you.
Yeah, Chairperson, that's covered on the last part of slide 25. Thank you, Chairperson. It's covered on the last part of slide 25, where we say that the accounting officer did not ensure that investigations were conducted into all allegations of financial conduct made against officials within 30 days from the date of discovery of the allegation. So we feel that there's really a lot to be done in this specific area. Because if you look at the letter of the law, says, in each case where there has been irregular expenditure, the accounting officer must do an investigation. He must determine if someone can be held responsible. If the person can be held responsible, he must take disciplinary action. That's for each and every case of irregular expenditure.
Yes.
Should be. There should be more. Chairperson, I think if I can, I see we're running a bit out of time. In terms of the compliance, I think we've basically in broad terms discussed most of the compliance issues. If you just take about, for instance, the one on page 25, asset management, it's actually a treasury requirement as well that you need to properly control your assets and you need to safeguard your assets. Although we did not qualify on movable assets, there were definitely areas for improvement there, and that's why we've reported on that. We've discussed about the bank overdraft for the PMTE, where we're actually saying that that there shouldn't be a bank overdraft. And then just on the top of page 24, the transferring national officer deposited funds into a bank account which is not the dedicated primary bank account of a province or municipality. It's a very specific requirement of the Division of Revenue Act. National Treasury actually publish what they call the designated bank accounts. And as a transferring officer, you are not allowed to transfer money into any other bank account than that designated bank account. And the reason for that is to protect the money, to make sure that the money goes into the right bank account. And there was a case where the money was, despite that, not paid into the correct bank account. If we then look at, and we've discussed this area in depth already, if you look at page 26, we say that it starts off by leadership. The accounting officer did not exercise oversight responsibility regarding financial performance reporting and compliance with laws and regulations. Those three areas. So all three of those areas needs leadership attention. Financial, compliance, performance information. The accounting officer does not in all instances establish and communicate policies and procedures to enable and support the understanding and execution of internal objectives. We've discussed that the honourable member asked the questions about policies and procedures. Here we say it's part of what leadership needs to do. Doesn't help you. First of all, you must make sure you've got proper policies and procedures. Secondly, you must communicate it. Then you must control it. Although an audit action plan to address internal control deficiencies has been compiled by the department, the progress indicated in the plans was not effectively managed and timely feedback on progress was not provided. So although we provided feedback, we said to the department, look, you're not progressing in terms of your action plan, nothing really happened. The accounting officer did not implement effective human resource management to ensure that adequate and sufficiently skilled resources were in place and that performance was monitored. It's very important in an environment like that, what performance management process do you have in place? Because surely if you have an audit opinion like this, if you look at the individual performance assessments of the staff, it should also be reflected there. Chairperson, if I can just continue, I think in the last one is, in the case of the PMPE, there were no documented policies and procedures, year-end closure plans, or initiatives to ensure compliance with SA statements of crops. Key, it goes back to that statement that I made earlier on to say, when we said to the department, you should do quarterly financial statements, the department view is, there's no legislative requirement for me to do that. Why must I do it for the PMPE? Financial and performance management, now we're getting to the lower level, more the management level. Proper record keeping was not always implemented in a timely manner to ensure complete, relevant and accurate information was accessible and available to support the financial reporting. Controls over daily and monthly processing and reconciling of transactions were ineffective. The accounting officer did not prepare regular, accurate and complete financial and performance reports. We've discussed that. Quarterly reports at least. The reviewing and monitoring of compliance with applicable laws and legislation ineffective. The auditor shouldn't come and pick up the non-compliance. It should be picked up first by management. Last, if you look at the governance structures, and this is key, we've discussed it. Regular risk assessments, including the consideration of IT risk and fraud prevention, were not effectively conducted. Key in this environment. A risk strategy to address identified risk was not developed and monitored. We can go back to the question about a risk committee. Is the risk committee effective? I think here's our conclusion. The accounting officer did not ensure that the internal audit unit was adequately resourced to ensure that the audit unit could effectively assist in identifying internal control deficiencies, develop recommendations, and this is key. Internal audit needs to be capacitated in this environment. The last slide just deals with the investigations. There's ongoing investigations internally, there's investigations by the SIU, and I think the committee is aware of the two investigations that has been done by the public protector. Then the Auditor General is currently busy with a performance audit on the readiness on government to report on performance against predetermined objectives. So that audit is still ongoing. As soon as it's finalized, we will discuss. Then on slide 30, we make some recommendations, and we hope that this can assist the committee in its oversight function. We say adequate planning and project management to ensure that allocated funds are spent appropriately and timely in order to achieve objectives. I can remember in one of the portfolio committee meetings, one of the members asked a question to the department, why does your expenditure spike towards March? And you got a reply, and I intervened and I said, I cannot accept that reply because with building contracts, the day you end the contract, you start a new contract. You don't start all your building contracts first of April and you end all of them 31st of March. You know. So policies and procedures, the honourable member addressed it, and systems should be put in place for all material types of transactions and performance information. And those policies should be communicated to all staff, monitored, and action taken against transgressors. Key. Record keeping must be improved. An audit action plan must be updated to include realistic targets with deadlines and parties responsible for the implementation must be held accountable. If you do not achieve what you should achieve in terms of your audit action plan, you should be held accountable. Progress on implementation of action plans must consistently be monitored, and immediate action must be taken where targets and deadlines are not met. As well, a risk assessment must be conducted, and this must inform the internal audit scope work. Internal audit must be fully capacitated. Decisive and immediate action must be taken in respect of non-compliance with laws and regulations. Focus on key control feedback by the AGSA. Those green smiley faces and the ambers and the red, we still do it. It's there, it's available, but we don't see an improvement. Appointment of permanent staff in the finance department of the trading entity that must have the required skills to enable compliance with SAGAR. Discretion to be applied regarding uses of consultants and skills transfer must take place whenever you use consultants.
Before, I don't have to make it with entities to say, can we leave entities out of order?
Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson, members, it's a difficult question. I will give it a stab, and then I will ask Mr. Serote maybe also to add his wisdom. I think it starts by leadership. We've discussed it. Stable leadership, but it's a bit wider than that. In that, really, in essence, each and every person employed by the department should understand his role, should be held accountable, and there should be a proper performance management system. And there should be proper performance contracts. And especially if you look at the top leadership in the department, if you look at the DDGs and the DG, there should be a proper performance contract. And the performance contract should be structured along the lines of obtaining good governance and a clean audit. And that should filter down into the performance assessments of each and every individual in the department. Each and every individual needs to know on a day-to-day basis that if this department is not going to progress towards a clean audit, then actually we haven't achieved anything. And then we can look at the details, as you see it in the recommendation, tighten up policies and procedures, bring in a proper culture in the organization, a compliance culture, bring in internal audit, give internal audit a strong hand to come and report timely where there's non-adherence to internal controls, where there's non-compliance, help people accountable, take that action against people who transgress policies, procedures, laws and regulations. The moment action are taken and people are be held accountable and disciplinary action are taken against people, I think the culture in the organization will change towards a compliance culture and the culture of good governance and excellence. That would be my go at it on the table.
Honorable Chair, I think the starting point was appropriate in terms of the example that was given at Home Affairs. I think the conversation begins and ends with the executive authority. And intentionally, if you look at our reporting, particularly the general report that I keep referring to, is aimed directly at a conversation with the executive authority so that it's a reflection of the accountability placed upon the executive authority by the PFMA. That is the person that where the buck stops. I think in terms of the department itself and the mandate, I think the department is all about service delivery. I think when one looks at the national outcomes, it's one of few departments whose mandate actually straddles across a few of the national outcomes. And it makes it a very, very important department, particularly when we are talking about cooperation between departments at a national level and cooperation at all three spheres of government, all in pursuit of service delivery. So I think as a manner of going forward, to be quite honest, the complexities must be demystified. The business must just be simplified, or the business of public works, the processes must be simplified so that the approach should really be about going back to the very, very simple basics. The internal control environment, the linkages made by the honorable members here were very spot on. You cannot have a situation whereby, for example, you have delegations of authority where there is no adequate link to the appreciation of the internal control environment and the various number of risks or the risk management environment. Those things must go hand in hand. And I think it's really about back to basics and having a very simple conversation with the executive authority. The information is there. Our engagements, I think, have also been quite simple. As you can see, our document that we engage regularly with is really a page or two that is meant to just even empower somebody that is not financially literate to be able to pick up these basic key controls that should be in an environment like that. Thank you.
Thank you,
Dr.
Can we agree that we close this? It was a very eye-opening workshop and too useful to some of us. To say, can we allow the Office of the General, Auditor General to leave us and remain as a family for closing up? And can I say, Mama?
Okay, on behalf of the Portfolio Committee on Public Works, I would like to thank the representative from the Office of the Auditor General for them taking their time to come here and brief us and educate us on some of the issues which we were also asking ourselves as the members of the committee. How did it come like this? But now we are clear. I'm sure we are well armed. We are now going to face the department when they come next week to come and present us the annual report. So with these words, I say thank you very much. I know it's difficult on your side also to come up with this report you have given us. Spend time and time, but you manage at the end. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Data you will be meeting the department with sober minds of saying, yes, we want to know, yes, we want to assist. I really don't know whether on the very same day are we going to achieve what we are to achieve, or are we going to do our oversight in them. Any person who will go through this in class, because really we need to rescue this planet. We cannot allow it to consume like it is. I don't know. Let's discuss before. Open for discussion. 10 years, are we there before? In our memory?
Madam Chair, I just want to say I haven't been around for a long time, as you know, I'm a new member, but certainly in talking to you and to other members and just sort of what I've been able to pick up from my brief time in the committee is that this committee is not taken seriously by the department. And I think that we need to tell the department that when you don't take your portfolio committee seriously, this is the sort of situation you now end up in. And that, you know, yes, we have to help, and yes, you know, we want to assist. They're in a very difficult position now, and it's in all of our interest that we help the department to get out of this mess. Because I think if we get another opinion like this next year, it's actually a reflection on all of us. Because the first thing that people do is turn around and say, well, you know, what's the portfolio committee doing, you know, to ensure. And so I think we have to tell the department that, yes, we must work in a partnership together. But like every partnership, you have some times where you actually have to sit down with your partner and have some harsh words with them. And I think we need to have some words with the department. So that they've got two choices now. They can, you know, they can choose to ignore us, in which case we're going to go and find out the information, and, you know, the truth has come out today. And then, you know, we're going to come after them. Or they can choose to work with us throughout the year, to bring us on board, to share the information in an open and transparent manner, and then we can work together to try and help them. But it's not going to work if we continue to be, you know, fed, you know, with the mushroom treatment. You know, they keep you in the dark and feed you rubbish. And you know, we can't operate like that. It's not going to be possible to go forward. And so I think that's the choice that we have to put before the department. There is some new leadership there now, so perhaps there's going to be more of a willingness to listen. But certainly, you know, I don't think we can afford another year of being, you know, kept at arm's distance by the department. Thanks so much.
But what you're saying, John, I understand what you're saying. But there's a rumor that there's a go-show in that. There was a go-show up to now in that department. There talks that would also consider what you're saying. Consider that there's this thing of saying that there's a go-show in that department. Are we done?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think, like the Auditor General has wrapped it, that there's a problem with leadership in this department. You know, if you go to Pretoria now, there, that department is divided. There are those who go with the minister, and there are those who the minister doesn't want. And there's also a lot of victimization there, where innocent people will be thrown out of office because of not supporting the cause of the minister. So I think we really need to intervene there, because at the end of the day, it is the holistical picture of the department that matters. And with divided staffers, this department will never be able to deliver its objective to the people of South Africa. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I'll be precise and to the point. The first thing is that you can take a horse to the river, but you can't force it to drink. I think there is lack of leadership in the department, and we can hammer them as much as we like. If they are not willing to work, we are just wasting our time. But I still, maybe, I don't know. First of all, there is this special investigating unit that is going on, which I suspect a lot of officials are going to be suspended, if not suspended already. Subsequent to that, there is this go slow that is in the department, because I think some officials collude against the minister or whatever, but it's managed, if I can put it, it's just chaos in that department. And we can say whatever we like, we will be fed with lies and lies and lies, as they have been doing for years on end. But I was just thinking, as an old person, maybe if we could write to the leader of governance, that maybe we assess the situation and write the results of that, because we are not going anywhere. And at the end of the day, the blame comes back to us that we are not doing our work as the portfolio committee members. That is a fact. Because there's nothing that is written down that, I mean, either to the president or the deputy president, to say we've come to the dead end of the of our road now. We don't know what to do. It's a reality. I mean, we've been saying all these things, we've been trying to assist, we've been going out of our way to say, please come, we want to assist you because we want this department to work. But at the end of the day, there's nothing is happening. Instead, they just come here, fool us, give us cut and paste presentations, and off they go, laughing all the way. Because at the end of the month, they know that they will get their full salaries. And down there, the people are very, very hungry. The poverty is looking at us in our faces, and we've got a mandate from the people of South Africa to assist them. And now we're coming against the wall. I'm really frustrated. Personally, I'm really frustrated.
Honorable
Gida.
Yeah,
you
see, for me, Chairperson, I agree with what you are saying. It's about the country, South Africa, the people of there. It's not about point scoring. But I'm just worrying that there's a thin line, because some of you are going to be victimized. Some of you are in the ruling party, and some will be victimized, but here we have to take a strong stand. The truth of the matter is that we don't have a department. Whether you like it or you don't like it, we just simply don't have a department. Even the general who's acting now is implicated in a lot of things. And as my colleagues have just said now, there's a ghost law. That is quite true, there's a ghost law. Worst of all, in some of the districts, there are problems. The O.R. Tambo district, the lady was removed there, is brought back by the acting judgment. There's chaos there. So I just don't know how far we can, but really, here is a problem of leadership, political and administrative. So our scope is then limited, because it is the president who can act and say political minister and deputy minister for this state. Both of them are useless. Let us, and I want there to be read that I said that. Both of them are totally useless. Actually, it is useless. So we have a major problem there. And really, you are going to be victimized, because you're going to be told, you know, but there is not much we can do with this department now. I don't see that. It's chaos within this department. So it's a political thing and administrative in leadership. So we're sitting with a major problem. If you try, you'll be victimized. That I know. It's the truth of the matter. But I know you're concerned about the government, because the people down there are suffering. There are no services going to those people there. And those people are not looking at Mamunguman of the ANCO, they're looking at us as members of the committee. So inclusively now we're thrown in this pot here. And we need to get out of this pot here. I don't know how we're going to get out of it, but this is a major problem. Thank you.
My papa will be followed by Mama Ubani, and then Mama Magana will go. No,
I just want to follow up on what she's saying. You've done your best. You know why you've done your best? Because you are neutral.
Yeah.
Now, we respect you as opposition because you are neutral. Now, that is also the same with the problem in the department, is that once you have your own group as a leader, then you would have a problem. Let us be factual here, Chairperson. If you had your group here, you were going to see us, we were just going to appear as an opposition. We were going to cut you effectively, but you are neutral, you are a leader. So we compliment you for that. And that is what the department needs. It needs somebody who's going to get there and be neutral and respect all the officials and not have a second group working for the second. That's what the problem is. Thank you.
Chairperson, I don't know, we make noise instead of Zopato as a stress as a cause. I would like to support the Ugeila. Nothing we can do here. Our hands are tight. Absolutely nothing. Because we can make noise. There are the people who are must decide on this. They are there on top. We know them. So if they don't decide, because what I can say, let's go through the report, annual report, presentation, blah, blah, blah. And you mustn't be afraid to mention in our report to Parliament about this department or our findings. You mustn't, our report mustn't be rosy. You must say it, you must call it spade a spade, because that is our work and we can act as far as. You know, I this report we received yesterday, and whilst you are talking, I'm just browsing it. There's nothing in this report. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. It's in your previous year. I don't know really what is, but in fact, the report on the Auditor General at the end, there's absolutely nothing in this report, if you can go through it. So, my proposal is that let's go through the process. Our report should be clear to Parliament, our findings on this department. That's all I can say.
You want to come in? Tell me what you want.
No, please. Honourable members, let's go and read and understand this report so that we can go and engage. And my wish and my prayer is that both the minister and the deputy minister should be there for them to listen at us. And let us not all lose hope. Baba Geyla, intimidation or not intimidation, you know, when the moon comes out, there's a silver line that comes first. The clouds might cover that silver line, but the truth of the matter is that one day the clouds will move and the moon will come out shining and clear. That's when the people will know the truth. The moon is not always covered by the clouds. The clouds will move and people will be able to see the moon. That is my belief. You cannot always fool people. I'm the one. The officials were fooling us from time to time. Now the clouds has moved and the moon is coming out shining. Let's take it like that. That the moon, the clouds have moved, and we are now seeing the truth and the truth is now coming out. Let's go to the meeting. We were supposed to meet them on Thursday, and they are saying they are not available. They have got prior arrangements. Is it not true? Yes. And secondly, CBE, CIDP, was supposed to come and brief us. Unfortunately, the department did not inform them that they are expected to come here. But Akona spoke with them, begged them to say, can you put all your appointments on hold and come together? So they will be coming together. I only hope that Akona will phone IDT and others to get ready so that they can come. What we said to the department is that they need to negotiate with the two remaining entities to take a space of another entity so that they can come and present, because we have got a deadline to meet. So tomorrow we'll be meeting CIDP. Truly speaking, there are no issues with the entities, major issues with the entities. Otherwise, thank you very much.
And can you just clarify, sir, are we not, what time will we be tomorrow? Normal time?
Half past nine.
Okay, so what time will we finish then? Earlier?
According to the program.
We're supposed to finish on the 5 tomorrow.
We have booked that the committee be allowed to sit until 5. But then if it finishes before then members will. But then they say it is.
End of our meeting, and can we be ready to